Garner Ted Armstrong, Brussels, Belgium. If 25 to 30 short years ago, any prophet or seer had stood in this square, this 12th to 13th century square in the heart of Brussels, Belgium, and had made the prediction that that short length of time, as viewed in perspective of world history, would see a final European Union being achieved of these neighboring warring states. And that includes France, West Germany, the Benelux countries of Belgium, the Netherlands, and of course Luxembourg, tiny though she is, and now Britain and Ireland and even Denmark, and perhaps, who knows, yet some other countries, including some of those in Eastern Europe and maybe even down in the Mediterranean, such as Greece. If such a prediction could have been made that full union would have been achieved in that short span of time, speaking historically, and second, that the United States of America would find her power waning all over the world, that she would be ripped and torn by serious domestic problems, about a 10-year racist strife that has torn our country, and also deep problems of loss of a feeling of confidence between the government and the people themselves. If you could have viewed the entirety as what we see today in world conditions from the perspective of 25 to 30 years ago, you simply would have said any seer or prophet making such predictions would have been out of his mind.
Europe United, EU, in French that means Europe Unie, pardon my French, but they say it backwards in the way we do, Europe United at last, the dream of centuries coming to reality in our time, in our decade perhaps. What does a united Europe mean? What is it going to mean to the United States of America, to all of Asia, to all of Central and South America, and to the world? Recently, on a trip to West Germany, to many of the European Economic Community countries, member countries, I was talking with top echelon officials there, as well as with men on the street, to obtain yet further insight into what is happening inside a growing European Economic Community, which is going to become a United States of Europe, if it is called that. It may be called something else. The voices from over there insist that Americans need to wake up to realize there are other people who inhabit this planet of ours besides rich, comfortable, overfed, spoiled Americans, with their 6% of the population of the world wallowing around in about 50% of its gross product, or of its wealth, basically, with its impact upon the non-renewable resources of our Earth, with its fantastic problems domestically, geopolitically, and especially right now, with a tremendous gap of confidence between Americans and their own leadership, and the problems that also implies for other foreign countries. Europe is emerging as the wave of the future. There is a new dream in European hearts and minds these days, one that Americans would do well to heed. In a recent interview with the president of the Bundestag, a lady, a very gracious one who might remind you of Mrs. Pat Nixon when you see her, I was asking a question which I asked over and over again on my visit to the European Economic Community recently.
If I had been standing in, say, Dusseldorf or another major German city, perhaps 80% destroyed in 1946, and I had seen you on the street, and I had said, in about 25 years, West Germany will be a very powerful, strong economy, the leading nation economically in Europe, that Europe will be a European economic union headed toward full political union. What would you have thought of my prediction?
1946, or noch besser 1945.
She wouldn't have believed it. So if you had told her what might happen, she wouldn't have believed it. But she says, what has happened in the Federal Republic was a very great effort, perhaps the most positive effort of all the things which happened in the last 25 years in Germany, to build from the ruins we had in 1945-46, from these ruins, a democratic society.
to build from the ruins. Not only did West Germany achieve this fantastic miracle of rebuilding into a vital, resurgent industrial and economic power today from the ruins of 1945 and 46, but so has all of the rest of Europe. And today, that European Union, EU, a slogan you see commonly along the road signs and even on license plates where they have stickers and license plates that look exactly like the slogan behind me. Today, as you see Europe headed toward union, you become aware that Europe is rebuilding out of the ashes of past defeats, not only through warfare, but past defeats that attempts to unite Europe along many different lines over a period of perhaps more than 1,000 years when you go back in history. An age-old goal in Europe has been to create unity, peace, and harmony among the many separate national states. Several times in the past 1,000 years, leaders of the European peoples have attempted to use military or political force to bring about the dream of a united Europe or a European Union. From Aachen, which is today in Germany, Charlemagne, King of the Franks, led his troops on campaigns which resulted in briefly united Western Europe. For 14 short years, that was. Later, his empire was revived in 962 when Otto the Great was crowned Holy Roman Emperor. Even as late as 1520, under Charles V of the Habsburg dynasty, the Holy Roman Empire encompassed territory in Western Europe as extensive as the territory occupied by Charlemagne. The Habsburgs' dynasty over the Holy Roman Empire, which included 38 German states, was formally dissolved on August 6, 1806. However, any dream of a lasting European Union held together by force and coercion was not destined to remain, as history proves when you look into it. Germany as a nation wasn't formed until 1871 under the direction of Otto von Bismarck. The Confederation was renamed then the German Empire under the Hohenzollern ruler William I. It wasn't for another 60 to 70 years that Hitler and Mussolini then desired, both of them, to rule Europe and eventually the world. Hitler thought, though, of a united Europe first. He really didn't desire war with the United States. He wanted, of course, to get rid of England, or at least bring England to heel and get England to cooperate and sue for a separate peace after he'd swallowed up Europe. But his main goal was to unite Europe first, because European leaders have always understood that the way toward ultimate world or global domination is from a united Europe, the heartland, as they call it, of all of the world. Hitler thought of it in the context of a world ruled for a millennium by a master race, and this, like all prior attempts, failed. So even though Europe has never really been united, the dream has never diminished. It was gone at from a completely backward and a totally different concept in the past and today, and that is the reason the dream of European unity now, or united Europe, looks to be far more a reality than ever before. Always before, the same old rivalries, linguistic, cultural, social, ethnic, racial, religious, you name it, they were barriers just as high as the Alps that separated some of those countries. And under the context of attempts to bring about a European Union through force, these barriers were only more exacerbated and highly intensified rather than diminished. The difference is that today there's an entire change in approach. They're going about it very much differently. Today it is a voluntary union. The leaders, that doesn't mean all people everywhere in each one of the European countries, but the leaders want to unite, and many of the people want to unite. The first steps taken toward the lofty goal of voluntary European unity began in 1950, when Robert Schuman, French foreign minister, and Jean Monnet, father of the EEC, proposed to place the entirety of the production of coal and steel in France and Germany under a common high authority in an organization open to the participation of the other countries of Europe. And this led to the Paris Treaty of 1951, which established the European Coal and Steel Community in July of 1952. It was 5 years later, the Treaty of Rome brought about Euratom and the EEC, or the European Economic Community, into existence. The six, France, West Germany, Italy, Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, were on their way toward the full realization of the United States of Europe, commencing on January 1st back in 1958. The next big step toward European unity came when the six became the nine, with the addition of Great Britain, Ireland, and Denmark. Are we to say that the nine is the last step, or will it eventually become 10, or even 11, or 12, or 15, or more? At the present time, that European Economic Community of Nations has signed preferential trade agreements with more than 25 African countries and has gathered under its collective wings one quarter of all of mankind.
The last Apollo flight lands on the moon while religious war rages in Northern Ireland. Politicians search for peace while pollution engulfs our planet. The gross national product of the United States exceeds $1 trillion, while some 15,000 starve to death worldwide every day. In this age of paradox unparalleled, where can you turn for understanding? There is a source that answers the frightening questions of the 20th century. It's called The Plain Truth. This magazine of understanding reveals the meaning behind today's world news and shows you the good news beyond. The Plain Truth is full color, 52 pages, totally free of charge in the public interest. Today, more than ever before, you need The Plain Truth. For a free subscription, write Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC.
While there are those who are ardent and enthusiastic over the progress toward a European Union, there are many roadblocks that still stand in the way. Some of the deep racial hatreds are still there. The Germans, I speak now in broad general terms, obviously, and not an official government line, but people out in the small villages and the hamlets just don't care all that much for the Italians, and vice versa. The French and the Germans still have deep-seated problems between them. This is certainly true, too, of people in Britain and Germany, and people in France and Italy, and some of the other smaller countries that are rather taken lightly, I imagine, resent it. When I was there recently, there was one such flare-up in the news account of some young German fellows in a small village who had completely beaten to death a couple of itinerant Italian workers. So it shows that some of the old racism, some of the difficulties toward any such union are still in the way. Politically, one such difficulty was experienced recently when, in an attempt to get the Dutch people to have the Dutch actually wanted a popular election within the confines of the EEC, and the French came along to veto it, is what happened. In my interview with Frau Renger, however, I also asked her about priorities of these national interests preceding those of the European Union.
To what extent are you, as the president of the Bundestag, constrained by having to take into consideration the attitudes of the other member states of the European Union?
Die deutsche Bundesregierung ist, glaube ich, führend.
I think one could say the whole parliament is very interested in uniting Europe, and Chancellor Brandt evidently has taken a very important part in progressing this idea. So the intention has to be to come to a cooperation on the economic, the monetary, and the political field. Of course, you have to take notice of the things, especially on the economic field, going on in the other European countries. And of course, this has an impact on our national legislation. All the nine countries now belonging to the European community are trying to find common levels for their national legislation, and this is especially important in the economic field. And the president finally said the problem is that some of these countries still put their own national interests in the first place of all their considerations.
Actually, putting national interests in the face or in the place of other considerations is nothing new to any country, is it, when you stop to think about it? That's true of the United States of America today, which in part is what this program is all about, because the United States of America must live in a global community of nations with its Atlantic partners. And those Atlantic partners are now becoming much stronger than they ever were before, and as a matter of fact are one of the five new emerging power blocs, along with the Soviet Union, Communist China, and Japan, as well as the United States, emerging to dominate this era of all of world history. It's time we in the United States began to listen to Europe, find out what some of their problems are, Listen to their fears as well as their hopes and goals and dreams. Listen to some of the problems of people in France and Germany who also pay about $1.50 for a pound of butter or about $4.50 for a pound of beef, who also have their problems on the job, who have their traffic snarls, their pollution problems, and all the rest of it. It's time, too, we began to look at what is happening inside Central Europe in terms of a competitive organization of people who are basically involved in the same products that we are and selling them in the same areas, many of them, inside the United States. Let's take a walk to a few graphs we have here for you, and I'll show you just what kind of a miracle that resurgence has been in the past few years. Here you see in terms of land areas the superposition of Europe all the way down to Italy with England and the square miles showing you that the United States is much, much larger. In population, however, population density is totally different. The European Economic Community, 255 to our 210 millions. In gross national product, the United States still towers above the European Economic Community, but we're a user society, not a consumer society, and some of our gross national product is threatening to bury us in tons of rubble that we can't seem to contain. Exports, however, you begin to get a little bit of the picture, and why the dollar is in the trouble that it is abroad, which we intend going into in great depth in future programs in this series. The exports flowing out of Euromark, as it used to be called, of the European Economic Community, tower to $63 billions per year, whereas the United States lags behind with $44 billions. In imports, the European Economic Community is importing $64 billions. That's all imports, raw materials down to finished commodities and marketable products, and the United States lagging behind again, $46 billion. World trade, take a look at the percentage that is presently dominated by the European Economic Community, 28% of world trade to the 17% of the United States, and 24% of the imports, this is exports and imports. Again, the European Economic Community well ahead of the United States of America in these areas. What a fantastic thing this is when you stop to think that since 1946, when I asked these people these questions, on one occasion you will hear before the program is over, the gentleman said, I don't think we could have found the street you were talking about in Dusseldorf. When you and I saw the motion pictures of rubble of German cities and other cities in Europe, 80% destroyed, mostly of course in the heartland of Germany, but many others that had been reduced to rubble, with their vital services all but stopped. When people in Britain and the United States said, Germany, Europe will never rebuild in 50 years. When some said they would never rebuild in all of history, they would never rise again. And yet look how far we have come today. With the European Economic Community now headed toward full political union, with at least two currencies, perhaps three, though Switzerland is not a part of the community yet, the Swiss franc, the French franc, and the German Deutschmark are stronger currencies than the American dollar today. What caused this fantastic miracle? In this series of programs, we're going to go through the entire story and eventually show you what it means to you right here in the United States of America, because it's eventually going to affect the food on your table, the clothing on your back, the kind of an automobile you drive, the money you earn, and the entire future history of the United States of America.
A new economic power block with a population of 300 million people is rapidly shaping up in Europe. With treaties signed already, the European Economic Community has trade ties with 93 nations, with a corner on 43% of world export trade. Europe is fast becoming the supermarket of the free world. Future developments in Europe will cause us to forget Vietnam's agonizing curse on American society. How will they affect you, your family, job, and future? Stay informed and stay ahead of world developments through the pages of the Plain Truth magazine. Full color, 52 pages, with monthly articles on Europe and other issues vital to you. Be sure to request The Plain Truth, the world's unique human interest news magazine. Your free subscription will begin immediately if you write Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC.
The Europeans dare not unite. They have lived both under the shadow of the fear of communism, with its avowed aims of domination of the entirety of the world, as well as under the nuclear umbrella of the United States of America. But Europeans have their own personal pride, their own nationalistic and chauvinistic feelings, Their own ethnic, cultural, religious, and all other social consciousness and awareness. From history, Europe has always felt, and especially in Germany and elsewhere in the heartland of Europe, that they were the very bastion of civilization, the protectors of culture. When you stop to think of how much of the culture of the United States of America, in terms of language, music, you name it, came from the European area, you have to realize that Europeans look upon us as a very young and a new and sometimes a very untrustworthy and shaky kind of a country. The impact of Watergate has struck deep into European consciousness to yet belittle and to diminish the shine and the radiance of the great giant of the United States of America in European eyes. It's time we in the United States began to listen to European leadership and to the European people, to listen to the sound of present-day history, because Europeans are now saying they are the wave of the future. And when I talk to leaders theirs, in this country as well as over there, as I have many times, they begin to get very excited, they get animated, they begin to gesture and wave their arms in the air. They talk about the Europe of the future, a united Europe that takes its rightful place, finally, in a position of nations. They are sick and tired of being reminded of the debacle of World War II. The Germans are sick and tired of being reminded of Hitler and of the horrible dark days of the 40s. They now want to emerge as a leading nation among all other nations in a global community and head on into the broad new avenues of a global space age and an atomic age of giant proliferation of goods, and to take their place among the community of nations in the world as a whole. When I went to West Germany, I obtained interviews with many leaders in the Bundestag from various political parties, secretaries to people high in office, including the press secretary to Willy Brandt. And in each case, I wanted these people to have an opportunity to gain this window of to the world, this little video tube Americans spent about 9 years of their life watching, from age 2 to 65, that's a big slice of our life, to let Europeans speak candidly and plainly to the American audience, to tell our peoples exactly what is on their mind, what they want to do, why they want to do it, what is their timetable, and what is it all about. I went to Rotterdam, one of the major ports in the entirety of the world, actually the biggest one of all, when you stop to listen to what I said, and I don't know the quality of the film, I hope it'll be good enough, but listen carefully, because I was standing at one of the very gateways of where all these goods flow back and forth. It's called Europort, the new name for that area of Rotterdam. Rotterdam is the gateway to Europe. A very interesting port, right behind me, the Eurama, the sightseers or visitors' place, right here at the hook of Holland, the very outwardmost land or point of land of this nation that is basically below sea level, explains to people how this vast port complex was built. Passing behind me, more than 32,000 ships per year, a fantastic total when you really stop to think of what that means, and flowing into Europe from the sources of the raw materials of this world, the oil of the Middle East, the wheat and the grain of the United States or of Canada, and some of the hides, the wool, the linseed oil of Argentina, and the beef and the goods that come to feed as well as to feed the furnaces as well as the people that work inside this complex of the European Economic Community. That makes the city of Rotterdam, or the port of Rotterdam, now commonly called Europort, the busiest port by more than double on the face of the earth today. We're here on the spot in Europe to talk to leaders of the European Economic Community about the growing industrial might of this complex of nations and its future challenge to the United States of America. The opening shots of a trade war have already been fired. They're going to become a very vitally important concern to you and to yours. It's going to affect your job, the food on your table, the clothing on your back in the years yet to come. While America sleeps, Europe grows toward unity, and these viable nations of the now expanded nine are working toward becoming the number one power on the face of the earth. American television, I have said recently before, a state association of broadcasters, reminds me of people living in a very large house, in a very volatile neighborhood, amidst powerful neighbors, with a lot going on in the community. But where a person in that household would creep out of doors at night and turn around to peep inside the keyhole of one of his own doors to find out what's going on inside of his own house. Because in our viewing habits, In our awareness, as we read newspapers, magazines, and absorb all the impact of the total media inside the United States, we seem to be far more concerned with personal news, local news, national news, and the average American can't seem to tell you what is EU. What is the EEC? Who are its member nations? How big are they? What is the volume of their trade? What kind of a challenge is that to the United States of America? How did our dollar become weaker? What do we mean, euro dollars? Why coin clipping? Why don't we have silver in our money? Why does it have that tinny sound Americans used to relate to European, quote, funny money, end quote, a few years ago in the 50s? How did this all come to be? At least one program, and I can say that there are a few more like it, such as this one, attempts to bring to the American public the voice from Europe and from abroad and from around the world about what is really happening and how it's going to affect us in our own private lives in the future, because we cannot escape the impact of the United States of Europe as it develops toward full political unity. We are in a situation now where Europeans want to tell us, you Americans must get your financial house in order, or we Europeans cannot guarantee to you any sense of continued tranquility, peace, and security in the world. They want to tell us, we've got some problems, why don't we wake up and get our own house in order as well? I had an interview with the press secretary for Willy Brandt, Herr von Weckmar. I asked him the same question that I had asked many of the leaders I talked to in Europe recently.
Herr von Weckmar, if I had met you on the streets of, say, Dusseldorf about 27 years ago and told you that this modern miracle of a reindustrialized, revitalized, economically stable West German government in the confines of a viable European economic union now, a community of economic powers at least, would be at this present status, what would you have thought of my prediction?
First of all, Mr. Armstrong, I think both of us would have had some trouble to find the street in which you were supposed to meet me in all that devastation and rubble, and I think my only reaction would have been, there goes a dreamer.
There goes a dreamer. Well, you're looking at that dreamer, and my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, before me, who talked about the recreation of a strong, powerful, viable economic giant inside Central Europe, even during the last moments of World War II. From that time to this, the Plain Truth magazine, which you can have a copy of free of charge by return mail, as well as this program on radio for many, many years and now on television, was talking about the emergence of a tremendous complex of nations inside Europe eventually to unite in full political union. You're living now in the moment of that happening. In the next few programs, we'll investigate exactly what that means to you and to yours in the months ahead. Until then, goodbye, friends.
Send your letters to Ambassador College, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California, or Post Office Box 44, Vancouver, BC.